Let's look at another one now. The second profile modifier is what I call pleasure and pain. It's the basic motivation of all organisms. Basically, life is motivated towards pleasure, to get something good for itself, or away from pain, to avoid damage, to avoid something problematic. Someone who's oriented towards pleasure, in other words, who's motivated by pleasure, by the goal, something positive, is someone who is very much focused on their goals. They have a vision of something positive and they really want to go for it. They have a lot of get up and go. Tend to be very energized by the goals because whenever they think about their goals, it makes them feel bigger, stronger, better, etc., because it's such a positive thing for them. On the downside, the pleasure-oriented people can tend to miss problems because they tend to avoid or really, they're not really noticing the idea of problems or pain, etc. They tend to be very optimistic so that sometimes they can be over-optimistic and avoid planning for plan B. In other words, what if something happens or something goes wrong? On the other side, if we look at the people more motivated by pain, they have the same sort of thing. In other words, they are more firefighters. They need to have a situation where things are going wrong in order for the motivation to kick in. So if everything's going well, the problem with a pain-oriented person is the motivation starts receding to the point where it actually stops. So they can only fight when there's a fire going on. If there's no fire, then there's no fight inside them. So sometimes the clever people who are motivated by pain will end up artificially creating that pain to help them keep themselves going. So they'll set deadlines. They'll, even in extreme cases, one of the people I coach, for example, an executive at a big organization, he was the troubleshooter. He came in when a department was really failing. They flew him in, he took over for a while and sorted everything out. Now, I actually met him at a time in his life where he was given a functioning department, and something very interesting started to happen then. Basically, for the first couple of weeks, he started acting very weirdly and starting people giving people weird tasks and just acting very much out of character. Then all of a sudden, a crisis developed. The whole department started collapsing, basically because he didn't manage it very well. And as soon as there was a crisis and everything started to collapse, he started shining again. In other words, he was back in familiar territory and things started going well. So sometimes the unconscious mind of a firefighter will actually try and create a drama crisis for them to be able to solve. And if there isn't anything in a drama or crisis for them to solve, then they feel almost helpless or useless, or they're not creative anymore. So that's the downside of being motivated by pain. The upside, of course, is that these people are tremendous troubleshooters. They're very good at spotting the kind of problems that might arise and dealing with them or overcoming them or planning around them so they don't come up in the first place. So these are great people to have at the start of a project to be able to kind of preempt what kind of things might go wrong and to be able to actually, maybe do something about it before it actually starts happening. So develop a strategy for dealing with potential problems before we even get there. Again, one of the downsides of being motivated by pain, though, is as well as not having any motivation when there's no pain around, people can get distracted from their goals. For example, because they're such fixers, they respond to drama, they respond to problem, they'll tend to drop the ball on something they're doing in order to go off and fix something else. Even though something else is so minuscule, it really doesn't need fixing. You can just let it go and things will start going on naturally without it anyway. It seems that pain-oriented people almost find it irresistible to not fix things. They have to go and fix things when they see the problem arising. Now, as to the question as to how you spot someone who's oriented one and the other, well, there's a couple of devices you can use. The first thing to do is to listen to the kind of language they're using. People who are very positive or very oriented towards pleasure will tend to have very active vocabulary like, I want to gain this, get this, have this, this is what I want. It's all about things you are drawing to yourself, getting an advantage over. People who are motivated away from pain, on the other hand, it'll tend to slip out in their language as well, like, I don't want this, I want to avoid that, I want to get rid of this, I want to fix that. So notice how the language is already implying how they're thinking, which is fixing things, avoiding things, not having things, versus having something, gaining something, building something. Now this leads us to an interesting idea, because essentially, you could ask someone, what do you like about so-and-so, and they'll go, oh, I think this house is fantastic because it's so big. Now, that might sound like it's very positive. In other words, it's very pleasure oriented. And it might actually be that. But you don't necessarily know, because some people have learned to, especially in a culture which is sort of very rewards optimism, they may have learned to be more positive in the way that they state their pain orientation. So the reason they might like a big house is because they might have grown up in a tiny little room somewhere and hated feeling poor, and a big house makes them feel richer. Or they have more space to do things because they used to be constrained before. So rather than liking the largeness and the space, what they're liking is the fact that they're not being constrained, that they're not feeling poor, that they're not in the old condition that they used to be in. And you won't necessarily know that right off the bat just by the answer that they give. Sometimes you'll have to do a little bit of digging to figure out what's behind that. I'll give an example of what I mean. Imagine, and I think I've used this example before, imagine that a little boy comes home and asks his mum, can I have some sweets? And his mother turns around and says, well, young man, you know dinner's coming in, you know, in an hour's time, and you can't have sweets before dinner because you'll spoil your appetite. So he goes, okay. He goes upstairs, does his homework. Next day he comes back again and asks again, can I have some sweets? And the mother says, young man, you know what's going on. We have dinner in an hour's time, and you should spoil your appetite. So no. So again, he gets told off, so he forgets about it. Third day comes along, comes home from school. Young man asks, when's dinner? Now, does he really care what time dinner is? No. It's basically an indirect way of getting at the actual question he wants to be able to ask, which is, can I actually have a sweet? Now, the same thing is true again with the whole pleasure-pain thing. Some people have learned to present things in a positive way just because it's less morbid, it's more socially acceptable, it's more positive, it's easier to create social connections when you are being positive and so on. So you sometimes have to do a bit of digging, saying, why is that important? What is it about that that made you want that? Now, when you know whether someone's motivated more by pleasure or by pain, and incidentally, it's not always necessarily a black and white affair. People have a tendency for one, but they'll still respond to the other. And when you know what someone's tendency is, then you'll know also how to motivate them. And the way to do it, again, can be very positive. For example, imagine you're buying a house where the kitchen's been built in, and part of the sales pitch is, you know, it's all built in, you can just walk in, and it's all ready for you, no hassle, no fuss, it's just ready to use. Now, think about what you're doing there. You're presenting this kitchen in actually a pain-oriented way. No hassle, no fuss, ready for you to use. Someone who'd be more, shall we say, pleasure-oriented would be someone who says, this fantastic kitchen has beautiful, you know, the wood, it's the fireworks great, you'll have fantastic meals, you know, your friends will come around and love it, they will admire your cooking, you'll be able to cook better than you've ever cooked before. And notice how that tends to orient people towards the pleasure a bit more. In one, you're avoiding the hassle of trying to put a new kitchen in. In the other, though, you're actually offering the value, the pleasure of actually owning the kitchen itself. And different industries will tend to attract different types of people. So if you know what kind of people are interested in the kind of products or services that you have, well then you can start framing your message for that. And if you don't know, you better be ready to have an alternative framing for both types, then throw them out then to see what people light up. And that's another way, by the way, to test for optimism and or rather for pleasure and pain. It's by throwing out motivation questions or oriented questions which are framed to be pleasure-oriented or pain-oriented, and see what people respond to, where people light up, where people start getting some energy to get going. At that point, you've got a pretty accurate guess what that kind of person is about. Let's move on now to the next kind of profile modifier. I call this the male-female polarity. Now, this is not necessarily to do with men and women. Men aren't all male and women aren't all female. And I don't mean necessarily to say that a female man is effeminate. We're talking more about a kind of an energy, a kind of a psychological condition, which is something which we tend to associate to male characteristics and female characteristics. For example, the Chinese use the whole idea of yin and yang, which is, I think, a less loaded way of talking about it. The male characteristic is basically one which is the energy goes forward, it's about meeting challenges, it's actually energized by a challenge. So if you challenge someone who's feeling in a particular mood being very male at that point, they'll rise to the challenge and they'll enjoy it. If you don't give them a challenge, they'll probably wither or get bored, and their energy will drain, their enthusiasm will drain away. The downside of the someone who is overly male can be that they can be domineering, they can run over other people and be abusive in certain ways. The female character, on the other hand, is kind of the opposite. Instead of challenge, the female nature or the female energy responds better to nurture, to compliments. So if you have, for example, and this is, by the way, an example where typically an example of a parent might get this wrong trying to motivate their children. You have, the classic example is the strict family where the father wants his son to be, manly and play football and do whatever. And he tries to motivate his son through challenge, saying, "Hey, let's go throw some balls. Come on, you can do better than that. Come on, your son, spin the ball harder or work harder. You can do better than that. You don't be such a girl about the whole thing." What the father is basically doing at that point is, chances are he himself is very masculine in his polarity, and he's using his own polarity, projecting onto his son, and trying to motivate him that way. Now, if the boy happens to be equally in a masculine polarity, he'll respond to it, in which case everything's going fine. However, if it's a more feminine polarity, the boy is so-called more sensitive, well, then all the challenge is going to do, it's actually going to inhibit him even more. So it's actually going to get less of what the kind of result that the father wants than doing another approach. What's the other approach? Well, it's the nurturing approach, compliments and the pep talk. It's say, "Hey son, let's throw some balls. Hey, you threw that ball really well. Let's see if you can throw it over here now. Wow, that's fantastic. I'm sure you'll be like the all-star player very soon." But think what's going on here now. Although the father might be having a kind of a very masculine polarity as a goal for the son, he's using a strategy that actually fits the mindset that that boy actually happens to have at that point in time. More feminine polarity, responding to the nurturing, the support, and so on. Now, the interesting thing about polarities is that they tend to switch more than most of the other polarities we're talking about, masculine and feminine. So there'll be times when your mood is, so say quieter, more receptive, and you don't really rise to challenges at that point. It's almost like the challenge is too much effort, it costs you too much energy. You'd rather respond to people being more nurturing, and taking it by the hand, being more supportive, and so on. The opposite is also true. There are times when you're more energized, you have more of that masculine polarity. At that point, all that you need is someone to turn around and give you, a challenge like, "You can't do that." And you turn around, "Well, I'll show you." So the thing about polarities is this is something just more you observe from people's behaviors in terms of their energy, their mood, the way they're interacting with people. Maybe a person is more masculine overall, which is fine. At that point, just make sure that whenever you start using the masculine polarity as a motivator, you're checking to make sure that when you're challenging that person, which is how they respond best, that they're actually responding properly. And if they're not, consider the fact that they may have actually switched polarities for a moment for whatever reasons. Now, let's start taking some of the stuff we've been talking about and see if we can combine it together to create a more elegant profile or more precise profile of people. Let's take the idea of extroversion, the feminine polarity, and let's put it together with an unusual characteristic, say a fire type character. So, fire elements we tend to associate with extroverted people, which is fine, but we don't tend to think of them also, we tend to think of them more sort of masculine traits as well, being out there domineering, telling people what to do and having fun at the same time. So, how might someone be if they were more feminine in their polarity, despite the fact that they're still extroverts and they're still kind of a fire element in their makeup? Well, this kind of person would probably be more hospitable. In other words, the whole feminine energy is about being inviting, supportive, nurturing, and so on. So they'll be more hospitable. They'll still be very sociable and, the host of the party, but they'll be more encouraging others, trying to bring harmony together in the group. They probably want to have harmony in the group, partly because that's what feeds their own motivation. So when other people are being nice and presenting compliments and so on, that's part of what feeds them to keep going in that direction. They'll probably be the kind of person that at a party would make sure that, everyone's having a good time and people are talking. My sister's a great example of this. If at a party someone's sitting in a chair quietly on their own, she'll make a point of going out there and sitting next to them. Just to, check if they're okay, and not necessarily saying, "Are you okay?" but just chatting to them a little bit, just to bring them out of the shell a little bit, make sure they're part of whatever that's going on. Let's take another set of characteristics. Let's take a introverted air male sort of polarity. So the air polarity, the whole air element is about being more intellectual inside your thoughts. The introversion, of course, makes that even more so. So the fact that they are very male in their tendencies would probably mean that they have strong convictions about their ideas, their thoughts, etc. But their introversion will make them seem a little bit aloof, possibly even arrogant. Because that's kind of the mixture of the two, if you think about it. You're very certain and very sure about your ideas. Other people's ideas aren't going to influence you all that much. At the same time, you're reserved and held back. You're not that sociable. You're not that communicative. People can see that as being aloof or perhaps a little arrogant in the way you present yourself. And it's just to do with the kind of information that your mind is looking for. In general terms, I would expect someone who is introverted, an air male, to be someone who's stimulated by debate, who likes debate. He wants the challenge of an interaction in that way where people, you know, throw ideas back and trying to shoot their ideas down. But at the same time, because of the introversion, they're not going to go out there and start, you know, sniping everyone's ideas and posing challenges themselves. They'd rather invite a challenge rather than present the challenge themselves. So if there was an extroverted air with a male characteristic, they'd be quite happy to go around and say to someone, you know, the idea that you said there, I think it's stupid, and here's exactly why. An introverted person won't do that because whilst they like the challenge of it and they might still be convinced that it is a stupid idea, the introversion keeps them more, it's more about indirection at that point. So they might actually comment offhand about some idea and hope that the other person will jump on it so they can start having a debate at that point. But rather than actually just saying, your idea is wrong, they'll just offer this little bit of bait to hope someone else jump on it. If they don't jump on it, well then another bit will be offered, another bit will be offered, until that challenge that they thrive on actually gets presented. Okay, so we've had a look at three different polarities so far and started combining them a little bit with the ones you already know about to start pulling out some characteristics, some more subtle behavior, and explaining that in terms of what you see and what you hear and, of course, what you can predict about people. Let's have a look at another one. This is the proactive-reactive polarity. Basically, people who are proactive are the kind of people that like to initiate things. They take control or jump straight in. They'll be quite happy to bulldoze things through because, you know, it's their project and it's up to them to get things done. So they're kind of at cause in life. They're the ones that make things happen and they know it. Reactive people, on the other hand, are kind of more at effect in life. Things happen to them. They kind of wait more. They'll need more pressure before they'll actually get their acting gear and start doing things. They'll probably hate starting things, although they probably won't mind joining a project that's already ongoing. They tend to like to think things through and assess them and let really life take its course and direct them rather than taking life by the horns and saying, this is what I want from you. Now, although it's true to say that, you know, certain characteristics, certain polarities will tend to bind together, you can always get the exception, which creates some very interesting things. For example, let's say that you combine the reactive with a kind of more masculine energy or polarity, or maybe someone who just, you know, enjoys flirting at parties. It's the kind of person who would normally come across probably quieter and more reserved until someone starts actually flirting with them, in other words, engaging or initiating the pattern. And as soon as that happens, you'll tend to see a transformation in them. So what reactive people can have, if they have strong other poles in the other directions, they'll tend to be very much sort of, you know, go their own way, or let things happen as they happen. And they'll seem maybe a little bit bland to the people outside them or around them until something happens to stimulate them, in other words, to challenge them into the new mindset or the new behavior, like in this case, you're flirting at the party, and suddenly everything changes. They become more fun, more animated. All the extroversions and all the other things that they have will suddenly come online. So you can have an extroverted, reactive person who will not be as much fun until something happens to stimulate it. And you can have an introverted, proactive person who people might think doesn't get much done because it's kind of quiet and hanging around. But really, whilst everyone else is chatting away, he gets off with starting a new project and getting things done and finished through. So notice how you can now start having very complex characteristics, very complex behaviors when you start combining polarities, which don't traditionally fit together, which don't make intellectual sense that they should fit together, but it also starts explaining how certain people are. So rather than saying, well, you know, everyone that's extroverted will tend to be more proactive because they have more energy, they'll be more masculine in their polarity because they're go-getters and that sort of stuff. And that may all be true. That may be part and parcel of tendencies that hang together. And maybe, I don't know, 70-80% of people that have one will have all of the others too. By the way, that number is just one I made up. But it's also true that there'll be other people who don't have that, who have a more unique combination, and that tends to create very quirky characters. Things where you go, it doesn't make sense. You know, he's this loud normally, but then he won't get up off his backside and actually do anything. So how can you feed those two together? Or the kind of person that, unless you shout at them and tell them how worthless or useless everything is, they're not going to actually have enough energy to actually go up and do something about it. So again, you now have some very sophisticated ways of putting things together. They're actually very simple things. Proactive, reactive, male, female, extroverted, introverted, pleasure, pain. These are very simple things to look out for and to test for. But when they start combining, specifically in the more quirky kind of patterns, you get some very bizarre behaviors. And let's face it, people do behave in very bizarre ways. And this is something that allows you to keep track of what's going on and why it's going on. And then that kind of quirkiness doesn't surprise you as much anymore. It can be charming, and importantly, you understand what's going on behind it. So let's move on swiftly to the next kind of profile modifier, which is basically optimism and pessimism. Again, you might notice that there are things or traits that will fit in with the other things we talked about. Optimists tend to be people who will also be pleasure-oriented. But you could have the strange sort of situation where you have an optimist that's motivated away from pain. And again, that's going to start creating certain kinds of behaviors, of patterns of behaviors and characteristics that to a lot of people will sound bizarre until they start realizing that he just has this slightly skew-if dynamic inside, and that's fine. Now you understand that person and you can start motivating that person better because you can use both the optimism and the stick of the pain at the same time to get even more momentum. Now, as with the other things, it's also true that optimism, you know, everyone knows what an optimist is. It's someone who thinks that, you know, the glass is half full, whilst the pessimist thinks the glass is half empty. Optimists expect good things to happen. Pessimists expect bad things to happen. As a rule, you can tell the optimist through the language. The language tends to be a bit brighter. It tends to be a bit more animated. There's more emotion in what they're saying. Pessimists tend to be more, they call themselves realistic. They tend to be more rational. And this is an interesting thing, by the way, an interesting distinction to look out for. As a rule, right brain oriented people tend to be more optimistic. Left brain dominant people tend to be more pessimistic. Now, I think the reason for that is because the right brain is all about that connection. It's all about that feeling, the experience at that moment, and it's a very pleasurable experience. Whereas the left brain is all about dissecting things, analyzing them, and looking for, if quote unquote, the realism, including, you know, the negative possibilities. Now, I don't think you can say that if someone is left brain, they're always going to be pessimistic. No, but it's likely that's going to happen because there's, again, a strong tendency. Just like someone who's got a male polarity is likely to be extroverted. Someone who's proactive is likely to have a male characteristic. These kind of energies tend to run in packs, but they don't have to be together. Let's give an example of what I mean by that. Let's put it together, all the different kind of characteristics, and see if we can create some kind of quirky personalities that you might even recognize from your own life. Let's take someone, let's take a Earth character, let's take a Earthy Edna, who is an extrovert with a very male polarity, who is very reactive, is pain-oriented, in other words, away from pain and the motivation, but is still an optimist. So we've got some really strange characteristics here. They're oriented away from pain, but they're an optimist. They're reactive, but they're very extroverted. Has a strong male polarity, although it's actually a woman we're talking about here. And it's generally an earthy sort of element. So what kind of things can you expect from this person? Well, chances are this will probably be quite a good leader. That's partly because of the extroversion, the male energy, and combine that with the ability to think very logistically and, you know, plan things through carefully so people know what they should be doing and when they should be doing. The fact that she's very extroverted means she'll probably be quite good at communicating the plan, which she's already got inside her mind, because being an Earth type character, they're going to be pretty much into the whole planning thing. It's going to be a person who likes to follow the rules and is quite happy to tell other people to follow the rules too, hence kind of a middle management kind of position. I'm not saying that necessarily all middle managers are this way, but it's what you would think of when you think of a middle manager, someone who communicates what the rules are, tells people when they've overstepped the line, and pulls them back in line when they need to, and kind of knows all the procedures that people have to follow through. Now, this person, we'll call her or Earthy Edna. So Edna is someone who is likely to think that life is pretty good overall. You know, good things happen, life is fun, life is good. But she won't get up off her backside until bad stuff happens to actually make her do anything. So while she expects good things generally in life, she's quite happy to let things carry on ticking along the way they are until life takes a turn for the worse. And only once the pain is strong enough will she overcome the reactive bit and actually get to do something. The other possibility is that someone actually gets to, or someone tells her to do something. In other words, the reactive thing combined with her earthy desire for liking rules. Someone comes along and says, "Here are the steps you have to take. I'm telling you right now, take them, or there'll be dire consequences." At which point they turn around and go, "Okay, off we go. Let's go and achieve these things now." Our Edna, being a very male polar sort of person, is likely to respond powerfully to challenges. So the kind of friend that's going to get her going is the one where someone turns around and says, "You know, I'm not sure this can be done. In fact, I don't even think you can do this. You'll always be such a loser," or whatever it is. And that's just because you don't have what it takes to get up off your backside and start doing X, Y, and Z. Because if you were due to X, Y, and Z, you'd probably be too afraid to start with X and move on to Y and so on and so forth. So you see how what we're doing now is we're taking all those little patterns and we're putting them together. We're offering them the carrot of the optimism that things are, you know, generally will work out well. We're challenging their male part of their makeup, which is more about challenge and stimulated by that. We're going to realize that they're reactive, so that they need something to stimulate them to actually get things going. So we're going to use pain to do that. And being an earthy type character, we're going to offer them, you know, a step-by-step process to follow along to make it easier for them to actually, for Edna to actually start doing whatever needs to be done. Okay, let's have another look at a completely different set of characteristic. And again, I'm going to try and throw in a few little spanners into the works, things that you wouldn't normally expect to see combined together. Again, to just see that we can create very interesting characters and know that there's people out there who are going to actually fit this kind of profile. Let's take a extroverted female air type character that's proactive, is motivated by pleasure, but is a pessimist. And again, some strange things start happening here. Especially this idea of being motivated by pleasure, being motivated by good things, being goal oriented rather than away from oriented, and being a pessimist at the same time, expecting things to go wrong. That's going to be a very interesting dynamic in this person. So let's say that we've got Alan Eyre, who's got this female personality or this female energy, is very extroverted. So our Alan is likely to be is going to be an intellectual. We know that because he's an abstract thinker, as is characteristic of the air type people. He's going to be very good at planning. He's going to be quite a planner and likes to know, or likes to set the strategy out ahead of time. Now, once things actually get decided, he is probably going to be quite good at getting things done. In particular, if it involves, you know, working with other people, because his extroversion is going to allow him to be able to communicate that plan very elegantly to others. He's going to be very supportive. In other words, his female nature, the female polarity, means that if he's going to be part of a team, his role is going to be basically to lay out the plan and then support other people as they go out and do it. So he's going to be kind of like the mastermind behind the scenes, the gray eminence that empowers others to use the plan that he's put together and actually make things work. Now, strangely enough, our Alan is going to be quite cynical. He's a pessimist and an extrovert as well, which means he's going to be likely to be cynical, especially about people, because he's going to be with people a lot and in those interactions quite cynical around them. So he's going to start expecting the worst from people. This might make him a little bit selfish in the sense that he doesn't trust others, so it's more about what he can get out of this situation. But at the same time, because of that female, more nurturing, sort of supportive role, he's still going to be helping others to get the job done, even if it's for selfish reasons. So helping the members of his team to actually put his vision into reality, it's kind of a pragmatic way of him getting the result ultimately, even though he's not the one actually going to go out there and do the thing himself. Alan is likely to be filled with an exciting vision. He likes the idea, or he's going to be motivated by an exciting vision. So if you give him a vision of some beautiful outcome, that's going to get him excited. He may doubt that it's possible, but he might get excited enough to actually do something. And because he's proactive, he's likely just to give it a go anyway, though despite his cynicism, and start seeing what happens along the way. His pessimism might be quite interesting in that it could balance out the tendency that the people who are oriented towards pleasure have of making mistakes in terms of not seeing potential problems coming along. Because a pessimist expects problems. So he's going to expect things that come to go wrong and may well end up planning for them. And that can make up for the pain or the lack of pain motivator that doesn't really motivate him. Now, an important thing that is going to be, we need to know about Alan, is I'd put money on someone like Alan being who needs things to go well. If things go well, his motivation will stay high and he'll carry on doing what he's doing. But the problem starts when things start going wrong. At that point, he's likely to start to collapse upon himself. Remember, the female energy is all about being nurtured and supported, and challenge gets him to collapse down. Combining this idea of the female energy with pessimism now, where things start going wrong, he's going to start expecting more things to go wrong. And so it's going to create a vicious circle of him expecting more things to go wrong, which now is attacking him in terms of the challenge. So if he was a more male-oriented character, that might encourage him to actually do more work to actually get the result. The female energy, the receptive quality of it, which needs more nurture, when needs things to go right, when he needs feedback to be positive, is going to be challenged by that. And the fact that he's pleasure-oriented, motivated by positive things, suddenly his motivation is going to be taken up under his floor. So his courage is going to disappear because he's being challenged rather than supported. His motivation disappears because his pessimism sees everything going wrong. And so with the whole situation going poorly, his motivation gets sucked out. So this could really be a terrible place for Alan to be in as everything starts collapsing because problems begin. Alan is very likely to make kind of a mountain out of a molehill because of all these different things. So how might we go about motivating Alan, particularly if, you know, the worst has to happen and a challenge situation gets hit and he starts losing all of his motivation? Well, the first thing we need to know, because he's so female-oriented in his polarity, is he's going to need lots of support, lots of compliments, lots of, you know, saying, hey, look at all these things you did, and you did that great, and I really admire how you're doing these things, and your plan is fantastic. You're going to want to get him back into the idea of the plan in the first place, the concept, so start breaking the pessimism cycle. Now, one of the things you can do is to lay out the master plan with him, or maybe even for him. His abstract nature is going to be intrigued by the whole intricacy of a big master plan. At the same time, you want to give him some simple steps to be proactive about, because his proactive nature is about just diving in and getting stuff done. If you give him some very simple steps to begin with, what will happen is he'll just take them, because even his pessimism won't be able to, you know, break them down. He can control that simple step. So even if he's cynical and say, well, you know, people aren't this way, he can at least control that and, you know, make that simple step still become successful. And now a success spiral starts. You've given him something to believe in. You've actually supported him. He's taking a simple step in the direction of that master plan, which has kind of intrigued him anyway because of his abstract nature of thinking as well as his pleasure orientation. He's proactive, so he's quite likely to take those steps if you present them in the right chunk. And at that point, his pessimism no longer starts being as much of a barrier, and he starts to dig himself out of the problem cycle he was in. Something that Alan's going to be very responsive to is high-order normalizations, very positive things, words like courage, love, country, duty. These are high-level positive normalizations, which again appeal to his abstract way of thinking, and the more pleasure, the more goal orientation in terms of his motivation direction. Another reason for giving him simple steps is you want him to make sure everything looks easy for him. Again, this is a way of kind of downplaying the pessimism. The more you give him to be pessimistic about, the more likely the old dynamic of the vicious circle pulling him down is going to be reactivated. The more you make things look easy and simple and logical in the sense that, you know, it goes towards a big master plan, the more likely he is to use that proactiveness to actually get things going and start the ball rolling again and rebuild that virtuous circle instead. So now we have two very interesting characters, two very different characters, both of which are surprising in the sense that their main characteristics, earth and air, have been violated in some respect by some of the modifiers, some of the polar modifiers that have changed it or put a quirk or twist in it, which is unexpected. And this is where I think the beauty is of hypnotic profiling. At this point, you really start to get the rich nature of human beings. People aren't just these two-dimensional cutouts where every fourth person is pretty much exactly the same. No. They have all these different varieties. And depending on what quirk, what polarity is expressed stronger than another, at that point, it starts modifying what's already there, what we can already predict about their general thinking patterns, and new and strange and interesting behaviors start coming out. And as you start understanding that, as you start looking for these things, and you start creating your own modifiers based on the situations that you meet frequently, at that point, you become very, very accurate at reading people.